In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
The far left, which is so concerned with Confederate statues right now, what do you think their reaction would be if you made black Americans pay for a statue of Robert E. Lee and put it up right in the middle of downtown Portland? Do you think they'd mind? In case you missed it, Democrats in Oregon's House and Senate and Oregon's Democrat governor passed a law for 100% free abortions, and you, the taxpayer, will pay for it. While other states are investing in infrastructure and jobs, Oregon is investing in free abortions. And whether you're a pro-life Democrat or Republican in Oregon, you will now have to pay for abortions. The far left, which would go even more insane if the government forced blacks to pay for a Confederate statue, that same crowd is celebrating that pro-lifers in Oregon are forced to pay for the killing of babies. Let that sink in. There is a uniqueness to every human being. From the moment of conception, which science has now discovered, begins with a flash of light, each human is a completely unique mix of genetics that cannot and will not ever be duplicated. It is the power of God to make miracles out of human mishaps, to create an incredible person whose life and importance you cannot even begin to fathom, and not just their life, but generations from now. Don't throw that away. In the darkness of Oregon's decision, we're shining some light. The Northwest Center in Washington, D.C. is an example of light and darkness because they're focused on the future. They support those in a difficult situation, and they do it all without taking a dime of government money. On today's show, we take a look at what can happen from both the good and the bad. The bad being what's happening in Oregon, and there is a lot of news on that front that we'll cover in the second half of our show. But what if there is a better way that could make a world of difference, not just today, but generations from now, all because they saved a life? I'd like to welcome Susan Gallucci to the show. She is the executive director of the Northwest Center, the largest pro-life center in our nation's capital. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Well, you know, we came across you through a tweet from Patricia Heaton, and so you were very new to us, and so I figure that you're probably also new to so much of our audience. Let's get to know your organization a little bit better. The Northwest Center is a place for women that have unplanned pregnancies and need help deciding their future. In the next two segments, we'll discuss the different portions of what you guys do, the pregnancy and the maternity centers. But let's just start off with why the center was founded.
Sure. The center was founded in 1981 by students and alumni of Georgetown University. They found that there were many abortion clinics in Washington, D.C., but there weren't any alternatives to abortion, and they wanted to provide women with options to continue their pregnancy, whether it be parenting or making an adoption plan. So some students and alumni started it in the basement of the church, doing pregnancy tests and providing what we call options counseling. So going through with the woman, like, what are her options? What are her obstacles to continue her pregnancy, and what resources are out there for her to continue the pregnancy? And it grew from there to its own location, to providing more than just tests, providing counseling, connecting women with resources, providing them with material assistance like diapers and formula and baby items, and then expanded in 1993 to the maternity home program, which offers transitional housing for the women, as many women are often kicked out of their home when they find out that they're pregnant, and that, you know, really allows them in a very concrete way to continue their pregnancies.
Well, the center was founded in 1981. This is just 8 years after Roe v. Wade. Was there much pushback from other women's groups when your center was founded?
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure if there was at that time or not.
Well, what about now? I mean, you know, it seems like a lot of, when you think of women's groups, a lot of times that means they're pro-abortion. What's it like now to work with other women's groups?
You know, it kind of comes and goes. We've been around so long and we're so well known in the social community. Last year we served more than 1,400 individuals. So women, men, babies, and so many people in the community refer to us. They know if women need a place to live, if they need diapers, if they need support. So in some ways, people don't even know that we're pro-life. And if they do, they're so struck by all the other things that we do beside just that one deciding point to continue the pregnancy or not. So we don't find too much outward resistance. We did a little bit just with some Yelp reviews recently that people put who had never been there before when Planned Parenthood and a lot of the other groups called on women to say negative things about pregnancy centers. But otherwise, we don't get too much, which is somewhat surprising. But again, we're somewhat in the fabric of the neighborhood that we're in and in the community.
Well, what I like so much about what you guys do is that you're so focused on the future. It's kind of like, okay, you're in this situation. Now, how do we make the future better? And I just like to read this from your website. Our programs are designed to be more than a Band-Aid solution. Rather, we strive to effectuate real change in the lives of the women and children we serve. The ultimate goal of both programs is to enable our clients to achieve self-sufficiency, which we define as having sustainable employment, adequate health care, and viable housing for themselves and their children. So how do you go about creating that self-sufficiency, and what's really been the key long-term to your success?
You know, it's going to vary on each woman's individual circumstance. I think one of the things that I love about us, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. My coworker who runs the pregnancy center is a social worker. So we use a lot of the tools of our profession to talk to people to effectuate change. So where we look a lot of, you know, get all the psychology of it, you know, what change do they want to make? And so for some people, it's just they're in crisis. They need a pack of diapers to get through the day to be able to think about something else. For other people, I know we've helped lots of people get jobs, find a daycare. The maternity home program, which I run, we're able to do that a lot of times more in that I see the women 5 days a week. I have a live-in staff who works with them. So I have a woman who stopped by last week, and I've been there 11 years. She was in the home when I started there 11 years ago, and she stopped in to say hi to give me an update, also asked me about the resource. So I think for a lot of the women, because especially they're in the home or they seek help because it's either, you know, financially or they don't have the support of family for many different reasons. So we kind of become that extended family. Hey, we're still here. I have people who stop in all the time who bring someone to us and say, you helped me so much. I'll never forget. I go to the post office to mail things. And while the postal clerk, she looked down at the return address and she said, you guys helped me so much when I was pregnant. I said, how old is your child? Oh, he's 10 right now. You know, and she had a good job. She remembered that. So for some people, it can be just one time coming in, having someone to listen. For other people, it could be, you know, being there every month to help them with, you know, what are your parenting issues? Where's your stress? I mean, some people just need the emotional support to say, hey, you can do it. Or some people need that connection. You can do it. And here's how. So I think of it as a partnership between the women and us. So what can we do to help you materially, like with the items, because that does relieve stress. What other resources can we connect you to? And then we see where they are motivated and what strengths they have to move forward. And that within the larger community, DC has a lot of poverty. So how do you rise out? It has a lack of affordable housing. How do you rise above that? And so it's three-way between the community, the women, and the staff and the volunteers at the center.
Well, it's so great that you guys are helping create long-term future for so many of these women while you're bringing new lives into the world as well. So let's go and take a break there. Coming back, we'll talk more with Susan Gallucci. She's with the Northwest Center. You can find them at northwestcenter.net. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking with Susan Gallucci of the Northwest Center, which is in Washington, D.C. Oregon has once again made the national news for all the wrong reasons, as Governor Brown recently signed into law a horrific bill that allows abortions at any stage for any reason and at no cost, except to the taxpayers of Oregon. So we're talking with Susan about their terrific organization, which offers alternatives to women who became pregnant. And Susan, the Northwest Center has two different programs. You've got the Pregnancy Center and the Maternity Center. In this segment, let's talk about the Pregnancy Center. According to your webpage, the Pregnancy Center provides the following services: pregnancy testing, options counseling, health education, and material assistance. They also make referrals for prenatal care, medical care, adoption, domestic violence, legal services, housing, educational opportunities, and job training. Man, I'm just impressed with what you guys do there. Walk us through some of those services, and can just anyone show up without any supports and be taken care of?
Sure. So with the Pregnancy Center, there's the two programs. There are the pregnancy tests. So we are not a medical facility. We hope someday to be medical and have a sonogram, but right now we're not medical. For the women, we give them a urine-based pregnancy test, which we explain to them and talk to them, and they interpret it themselves. And then if it is a positive test, we make sure that they have a doctor to go to, also some other places, send them for a sonogram. But during that appointment, we do what's called options counseling. So we talk with the woman, what is her situation, what are the circumstances, if she's thinking about abortion, what are those circumstances, what could be some things to bring, you know, that would change in her circumstances, whether it be housing or help with daycare, just knowing that, you know, women can continue their pregnancies. We had a lot of college students while still in college and make that work. So we talk during that test, we talk about those things. And then we do the test, we follow up with them, so that might be connecting them or going with them to their medical appointment. Hmm. That might be giving them a tour, you know, lots of different things to see what is going on in their situation. The other program we offer, we call it the Step Up Program, so they're stepping up and out on their own. And that program, people don't need any referral, they can do it by appointment, but they come into that program. They need to have a child 3 months or younger, and then they can come as often as once a month until the child is 2.5. In that program, they sit down with a counselor. We have volunteers and staff who speak Spanish, who speak Amharic, because we have a large Ethiopian and Eritrean population in Washington, D.C., and we go over whatever is going on with them. We talk about, are they getting good prenatal care? We talk about safe sleeping for the baby, good nutrition, as well as sit down and what resources. We do screen for domestic violence, again, helping them with resources. And after that appointment, they'll receive material items. We also have parenting classes and do other things. But again, it can be, we're so small, we don't get any government funding. We're funded just by private donations. So we're really able to meet the women where they are and say, what's going on today? Or they might be there for that material assistance and need a pregnancy test. We talk about that, relationships, parenting. Again, it can be very individual, but our focus is going to be on her, what's going on with her, either with the pregnancy or after the baby's born, so that being pro-life isn't just her having the baby, but it's after the baby's born. Yes. And the next year after that and the year after that. So long-term, what's going on with her.
Well, and again, that's one of the things I really like about the way that you've got your guys' center set up, is that you really do focus on the future and that long term, because it's not, you know, there's an immediate crisis that, you know, they have this unplanned pregnancy and you know, suddenly things are very overwhelming. All of the pressures, you know, you mentioned earlier, the pressures from their families. A lot of times they're being pressured to have abortions. So you guys really do focus on that long term strategy to get into. It's not just the baby; it's the life after the baby. As I mentioned in the opener here to this segment, is that Governor Brown has here in Oregon just signed this completely unfettered abortion bill. And so if somebody comes to your organization and says, you know, I've got this baby, I don't know what to do, I'm considering maybe having an abortion, what do you say to a woman in that situation?
Well, we talked to her about why are you thinking you have to have an abortion? You know, really going through, and again, using counseling skills, because we're not there to judge her. We're not there to pressure her either way. We're there to sit with her and have her sort out what is going on. What do you want to do? Have you had abortions in the past? What was that like? Have people around you had abortions? Do you know how far along you are? And a lot of it's education. We're going to educate her biology. This is fetal development. We spend a lot of time too, just this is pregnancy. This is how you get pregnant, you know, because there's a lot of misconceptions out there as well. We of course promote abstinence, but I'm going to talk to the women, what are you doing? What are your choices around your sexuality? And helping her think through what choices she's making. Because there are women, they have a test date, you know, and wanting abortion, they may leave having an abortion. And I always, it's anecdotal, but a lot of women we see will come in for the pregnancy test, they will choose an abortion, and 3 months later, they come back to us for their next test. And again, that's because that atmosphere, we're not going to refer for abortion, we're not going to help her have an abortion, but we're not going to judge her because she doesn't need any more of that. But what I find interesting is that so many, when they come back, have had an abortion, and 3 months later are pregnant again, are in those same circumstances that were the reason she said she had to have the abortion in the first place, and says, I will never do that again.
Well, then
we're like, just like we were before, we're going to be here again to support you through your pregnancy and beyond. But I think it can be very telling about what the abortion experience, which is individual for each woman, but again, giving her information. This is what the abortion procedure is. These are possible effects. This is what fetal development looks like. Because again, she needs that information, and I'm not so sure, you know, she's going to get all that information and that time to think at an abortion clinic.
Yeah, and a lot of times we often hear that they're just not being given good information there. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, more with Susan Gallucci of the Northwest Center. We'll talk about some of their programs and how they're doing things right by focusing on the future. And welcome back. We're talking today to Susan Gallucci of the Northwest Center, which seeks to promote the dignity of women and a respect for all human life. The Northwest Center seeks to accomplish this goal by offering the loving support and comprehensive aid necessary to enable all women to continue their pregnancies, deliver healthy babies, and adequately care for themselves and their children afterwards. And Susan Gallucci is their executive director. And, you know, one of the things that we were talking about in that last segment there was the funding that you guys get. And I'm amazed, really, that you guys do so much with so little. I'm looking here through your maternity center, and again, this is just off your webpage, northwestcenter.net. And it says here, your maternity home is a comprehensive transitional housing program which offers transitional housing for women, pregnant women ages 13 through 30. Programs include life skills training, a safe, stable home for up to 18 months for homeless pregnant women and their children, case management services on a weekly basis, access to adequate health care and health education, counseling on household budgeting, saving and financial management, assistance with and referrals for quality daycare, adherence to a set of rules that instill the discipline necessary to take care of family, development of interpersonal communication skills, referrals and linkages with a variety of community-based agencies. I mean, it's just on and on. I'm just so astonished that you're able to do all that, again, without taking any government funding. But regarding the funding end of things, how do you guys get your funding, and why did you decide to go that route to not take any public funds?
Well, most of our funding comes from private donors, a few grants. We have a big event in October, the Indian Summer Ball, about 20% to 30% of our budget. And then, of course, we do mailings, Mother's Day. We do a Christmas card mailing. All of our donors, both big and small, as well as all of our volunteers. We couldn't do all that work without either our one-time volunteers, our regular weekly or monthly volunteers. Without the government funding, it really gives us the freedom to live of what it means to be pro-life and to serve people and look at the dignity and the worth of the human person from conception to natural death. We're more on the conception side, but through all stages of life, just to have that. And I love having the flexibility with the maternity home. We've had that long list of things, and it really it brings me a lot of joy as a social worker to be able to walk with the women and have about 4 house at one time. And it can be that individualized. They can stay in the home for 18 months from the time they enter. They can enter at any time in their pregnancy. Just the few places they can go in Washington, D.C. when they're early in their pregnancy. And then I can say, you know, what do they need? Do they need someone to go to their appointments with them? Do they need someone to grocery shop with them or teach them, you know, how to meal plan or how to budget? I have some college students, so it's, you know, maybe picking up the child from daycare if they have a class that goes after daycare close. Maybe I have one who you know, she wasn't motivated to go to class. She missed the bus. I said, get up. I'm going to your graduation. We're going to class. And, you know, being that extra little push, we do babysitting if they're working, you know, different hours, or they really need to take a shower and they need a break, you know, providing those gaps that family might provide. And that's a nice thing about being a small program, is being able to really meet the women where they are and trying to meet those needs.
Planned Parenthood was getting $500 million per year. What would it mean to the Northwest Center if you got just $1 million, 1/500th of that? What could you do with that?
Well, we could definitely move to the medical model with the pregnancy center. Right now, we're in a townhouse in a busy neighborhood in Northwest DC, the pregnancy center in the basement, the maternity home upstairs. So that would help us to say, okay, we're going to move the pregnancy center, or, you know, maybe do a lot of the mobile. DC is a big place. There's pockets of poverty that maybe we could do a mobile ultrasound, but that would certainly help us. Our goal is to be medical. And then, you know, the next million, there's such a need for housing, and thinking of a bigger, more dorm style for housing, something people have experienced a lot of violence, a lot of mental health needs, that I would love someday to see a program where there was, you know, a counselor they met with every single day to do that individual therapy to deal with their trauma so that they could, you know, heal and move forward and be successful in the future.
One of the things that you mentioned on a video that we'll put up on iSpyRadio.com, and we've only got about a minute and a half here with you, but you mentioned the importance to share stories. You were talking to some pro-life bloggers. And as part of that, you say it helps dispel misconceptions. So what are some of the misconceptions about maternity centers, what it is, what it's like, and what you do?
I think, you know, very long time ago it was that women were sent away. There's so much shame. There still is so much shame with the unplanned pregnancy. They were sent there when they got pregnant, and then they came back and they were forced to make an adoption plan. Mm. But now maternity homes are different, you know, and that women can choose to parent. They can also certainly choose to make an adoption plan, but they're places where they're choosing to be, where they're thriving, and they really become community. I think there's a lot with, you know, with the Benedict option, with people talking about community. The moms are there for each other to help babysit, resources to share, because they're in similar situations and circumstances, to encourage each other. And I know I'm inspired by what I see these women, their resilience, and to watch, be a part of their child growing and blooming. And so I think it can be a blessing for everyone.
Well, I think it speaks very highly of you that you've got somebody that you, like mentioned earlier, that 10 years ago had been helped by you guys, and she has never forgotten that. And she's also been steering other people to you. So God bless you in what you do. Susan Gallucci of the Northwest Center, that's northwestcenter.net. It's all spelled out, not NW, northwestcenter.net. And we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. Susan, thank you.
Thank you.
HealthSource Northwest is an independent brokerage agency which focuses on personal lines of insurance such as health, life, dental, disability, and long-term care. Lisa Lettmeyer is the owner and operator, and she specializes in navigating the complexities of the health insurance market for individuals, families, and small business owners, and that is why we love talking to her. Lisa, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
So we've got this situation. We just finished wrapping up. If people are just joining us, we just finished wrapping up with Susan Gallucci, who is with the Northwest Center, based in Washington, D.C. It is the largest pro-life center in our nation's capital. And we briefly discussed with her this fact that Oregon's governor signed an unrestricted abortion bill. As one news service called it, it's a free abortions for all bill. It forces insurance companies to cover without copay. It's completely free. It compels insurers, public or private, to provide a whole swath of reproductive services free of cost and regardless of income, insurance type, citizenship status, or even gender identity. It's interesting because in some states, such as New York, abortions are cost-free if they're deemed medically necessary, but the Oregon bill is unique because it goes beyond that, in that patients would have access to the procedure for virtually any reason at any time, including sex selective and late-term abortions. This is really a shocking bill to people that in Oregon that are pro-life. Your taxpayer dollars are now going to cover these sorts of things. But You know, well, first of all, let's start with the notion of forcing insurers to pay for abortions with zero copay. What do you think of this?
Well, that specific comment about, you know, the abortions being a zero cost share to the client, meaning no deductible, no copay, is interesting because somebody could come back and say, I just got a life-threatening cancer diagnosis and I have a deductible and an out-of-pocket max, but I have to meet that. Mm-hmm. Yet a lifestyle choice, which is honestly what an abortion is, that's a choice you're making, is now being forced at 100% coverage by the insurance carriers. So that piece of it I find fascinating. From the insurance perspective, of course, anytime the insurance carriers are required to cover something at full cost, of course, that drives up the premiums because it's built in, and it has to be. Organs, why they did this, it was basically a knee-jerk reaction to the idea that the Republicans may repeal and or replace or combination thereof the Obamacare. And within Obamacare, you've got a whole slew of preventative care services and exams and a big section on women's health. So we already have, under that law, coverage for pre- and postnatal care at no cost, birth control at no cost, breastfeeding classes at no cost, women's wellness exams, mammograms, all of those are no cost. And then there's other things for other adult, you know, preventative services and children's and things like that. But there's a whole specific section on women's health. And so Oregon's thinking, well, maybe this goes away if they repeal Obamacare. They went ahead and put through this law. So again, the law isn't just abortions, it's women's health in general. But I always come back and I say, you know what's interesting about this, guys? If you look at the current law with Obamacare, it also covers women's sterilization and women's birth control, as I mentioned, but it doesn't cover a male sterilization or condoms. So it's kind of interesting. We're only worried about one side of it. And they always use the mantra, this is women's health. And yes, I guess you could, depending on your side of the argument, but honestly, your sexual life is your life choice. It shouldn't be something that an insurance carrier or state and tax, you know, tax dollars, both state and fed, should have to pay for. That's my opinion. But is this going to affect the insurance carrier's rates? Yeah, it will.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, I think that really is the interesting thing, that you're allowing or you're forcing insurance companies to pay 100% on something like this, because I think you're right. I think that you can't then say, well, you can have no copay on this one, but this other issue, like you said, you're going to have to pay some sort of copay. Is that the direction that the Democrats here in Oregon are trying to head us toward, where we've got 100% coverage for everything, no out-of-pocket expenses at all? I mean, you're essentially talking single payer at that point.
No, I can pretty much guarantee that Oregon legislature doesn't think that. They do, of course, want a single-payer system, but they've done studies on it. I think at this point, three times they've allocated money to do a study on an Oregon, you know, overall universal health plan, and each time it hasn't penciled. So there's no way that they're ever going to get to a point where they're going to just offer free coverage for everybody for everything. But this particular piece, it's a very motivating, very emotional topic that can drive a lot of votes your way if you're on a certain side. That's how I see it. Because I, as a female, have never felt that my insurance plan doesn't care about my health. I've been paying for, you know, I don't use it anymore, but when I was using birth control in my 20s, I had no problem paying for that. That's a choice I was making. So it's just interesting where we've gone.
It is. The other mix here, and we only got about a minute with you, is we've got the federal law that is preventing federal monies to pay for abortions, and yet a lot of the monies that Oregon is relying on, Medicare, Medicaid, those are federal dollars. I mean, how can you then use those monies to pay for abortions?
Well, and that's going to be the challenge, because they did. It was a twofold law. It was creating this benefit for not just forcing it onto the insurance carriers for them to pay for it for people that have insurance, but for those Medicaid population to get it at no cost. So I'm not quite sure how they're going to delineate that when they go to get it. They've also passed for coverage for non-resident children. So illegal immigrant children are going to now be on Medicaid, and that also isn't being allowed to be paid for by the federal dollars. Wow. And that was crazy. I think $35 million or something like that was the price tag for the first year. So where they're getting that money, they're just kind of doing some shell games. They did create and put through some taxes and some changes to help fund some of this stuff, and that's I guess, the devil's in the details.
Well, crazy stuff. All right, let's go and take a break there. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the health of Oregon's insurance market. Stay with us. Lots more with Lisa Lettmeyer of Health Source Northwest. And welcome back. We're talking with Lisa Lettmeyer of Health Source Northwest. She is an insurance expert specializing in navigating the complexities of the health insurance market, which is why we love to have her on. Enrollment is coming up soon. You can check her out at healthsourcenw.com. So, Lisa, just as kind of a follow-up from that last segment, we were talking during the break there about the shortfall that they had, this $900 million shortfall in Medicaid funding. Where are they making that all up from?
It's a pretty convoluted formula or recipe on how they made it up. You can actually see it in House Bill 2391 that passed in this last session. But they're pulling it from lots of sources, reducing the growth rate of the CCOs, which take care of our Medicaid population. There's an increased hospital tax. There's a new rural hospital tax of 4%. There's a new 1.5% tax or an additional to the carriers, which included PEB, our public employees benefits, general fund increase. There was lots of different areas where they pulled money to get to that 900 plus million. And of course, they had to accommodate for paying for those illegal immigrant children on Medicaid that wasn't going to be covered by the federal funding, along with, like you said, there's this weird situation with how do you cover those abortions now because it can't be paid with federal dollars. So lots of places that they pulled money from, all of which will, of course, ultimately start to increase costs for the private market, because if you're taxing and, you know, hospitals are taxing carriers, that's where it goes.
So they're making that up by not only charging more, but it sounds like they're actually going to have to probably cut back on actual medical service.
Yeah, one of the interesting things in there is the CCOs, which are the community care organizations that take care of our Medicaid population on Oregon Health Plan. Their growth rate reduction was reduced from 3.4 down to 2.8. So the growth rate reduction is basically they get funding from the state and feds to take care of that population of Medicaid people. And as we all know, the cost of living, the cost of health care continues to rise. So if their growth rate was reduced, that means they're getting less dollars to take care of those people.
And so the only way around that then is to provide fewer and fewer services, because you can only stretch that dollar amount so much, which means you're going to have to cut back on the amount of services that you provide for. And this is exactly what we've been predicting for years now, is that you're going to actually end up being incentivized to not go to the doctor. Those doctors themselves are going to be incentivized, in this case, forcefully so, to not provide care and to back off on treatments. I mean, it is just a colossal recipe for disaster. I don't see how this is going to get any better at this point.
Well, there's arguments on both sides, but at the end of the day, I'm a numbers person, and, you know, doctors and hospitals, they still are a business. They have to make ends meet.
Sure.
They've got to pay their staff. They've got to have some kind of a profit for the reason that they're there in the first place, and you can only squeeze things down so hard. So
right.
Yeah, this is we already see issues in the Medicaid population and their services and access, but I would imagine, I'm not an expert in this area, but I would imagine this would make it worse.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I was looking for a different file and came across an old news report that I remember you and I had talked about years ago. I think it was from a study of about 2014 dollars, and in 2015 when the report was released, they were saying that after years and years, the insurers had been making profits here in Oregon, and now all of a sudden they're losing money. And in 2015, you had like five or six of them that were losing tens of millions of dollars. And even in the earliest days of the Oregon Health Authority and the CCO models, I remember having you on and during that whole grant experiment, and it was supposed to be saving people money while improving care. That was the big pitch that they used to get so many Republicans on board. It was going to save money and supposedly improve care. And yet, from what we just discussed, I think we're failing on both counts.
Yeah, and again, I can give my opinion, but from an outside perspective, kind of understanding the industry and how this stuff works, that's what it appears to me. But it's an interesting dilemma. We've given away access and care. Certainly there are people that need it, but we've also given that Medicaid access to send people that don't qualify.
Right.
Again, remember, and we've had this conversation before, you qualify to be on Medicaid based upon your current monthly income, not what you think you're going to make for the whole year, not if you won the lottery tomorrow, your current month income when you apply. If that dollar amount that you put down falls within the guidelines of, you know, at or below 138% of the poverty mark, you get Medicaid. Wow. And that includes people who are recently here, you know, coming in with a green card, what I've heard recently, the terminology generation green card, where your family's already here, so they bring over their other family.
Yes.
And they're able to get a green card. So we've now got people coming into our country, and they're on a green card. They're here legally. But because they're not making any income, they immediately get a Medicaid. Wow. Under our current program.
It's ugly, and we can talk about that for quite some time. In terms of the health insurance market itself, I know that you don't have the full numbers yet, or at least I assume you don't, but in terms of potential increased costs and premiums, do you have any guesses where this is going for the next enrollment season?
Actually, the rates that we are waiting to get from the carriers at this point are going to be better than they would have been. When the carriers first filed, we had rate increases on a low side of 7% all the way up to 21% in the individual market. And that was the average rate increase request from the carriers in the legislative session this season.
So they're still going up, but just not quite as much as they had initially thought.
Right.
Okay.
So what happened in the legislative session, they were able to push through legislation for a reinsurance program here in Oregon. And with that, the idea of a reinsurance program, which we kind of had before with OMEP in a little bit different scope, is the carriers are all feeding into one pot through a tax, and then any carrier who ends up suffering a larger amount of claims can pull from that to make themselves whole. So with that being created in this last session, we were able to, the insurance division was able to go back to the carriers and say, look, your price increases don't need to be as high because we should be able to help cover some of those losses or spread that risk better, which is the point of a reinsurance program. So now the finalized rate increase averages are now as low as one carrier is getting an average rate decrease of 1.5%, and then the highest rate increase is coming in at almost 15%.
Hmm.
So they're still increasing, but they're not nearly as bad as they were going to be.
Yeah. So the good news is the bad news isn't as bad as the bad news could have been. So.
Exactly. But
all
we're
right,
still waiting to see.
Yeah, okay, we're up against the clock. Let's take a break there. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the Oregon Health Authority scandal and some scandalous cost shifting in Oregon's budgets to cover the gaps. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Lisa Lettmeyer. Her website is healthsourcenw.com. She's an insurance expert specializing in navigating the complexities of the health insurance market. And that's the website one more time, healthsourcenw.com. So during the break there, we were talking about this notion of reinsurance. And this is a term that I've heard a couple of times. And just to elaborate on that a little bit, in a nutshell, as I understand it, reinsurance is essentially insurance for insurance companies. Is that about it?
Yeah, and it can be done in different ways. So I don't know the exact specifics of what the legislature passed, but just kind of general concept is most likely the carriers will all pay a percentage or a tax into the reinsurance pool. And what happens in any given insurance market, so this coming year we expect to have 7 individual insurance carriers to choose from depending on where you live. Within those carriers, some are going to rise to the top. And take on more business than some others because maybe their prices are better or their network is different or whatever the case may be. When that happens, ultimately the carriers that take on more business potentially have more claims to deal with, whereas the carriers that have fewer clients, the opposite is true. So this pool, this reinsurance pool, is utilized to help those carriers who might experience a higher than normal claims and may actually put their numbers under, they can pull back from that pool or take money from it to shore up their financials. Hmm. And that's what was supposed to happen the first year and the second year of the Affordable Care Act. There was a national reinsurance pool, same concept. that wasn't properly funded because it was built upon carriers making money, which they didn't do that year. So when MOTA was in the paper having lost $90 million and they were only going to get $10 million back from that reinsurance, that was a failure. So that didn't work. So Oregon's going to try their own. Other states are attempting this also.
Yeah, I know. I know Iowa's trying to do that as well.
Correct. You also can accomplish a comparable thing with a high-risk pool. So we had one here before the Affordable Care Act called the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool, or OMEP. Same concept, a little bit different way to handle it. People that were declined in the individual market would go to the high-risk pool. The premiums for that weren't enough to cover the claims because they were high-risk people. So all the carriers fed into that group, of that insurance, to help pay those claims via a tax. So same kind of concept.
Well, so before we run out of time here with you, we've got a CCO up in Portland called Family Care that is in the process, it sounds like, of suing the Oregon Health Authority. Oregon Health Authority looks like it has been trying to undermine Family Care for whatever reasons. This is an ongoing scandal. This is our first time really that we're touching it. And this is from the Portland Tribune. The nonprofit Family Care has been a prominent and vocal critic of Oregon Health Authority leadership for years. Earlier this year, after once again receiving the lowest reimbursement rates in the state of any of the 16 organizations serving the Oregon Health Authority, it again sued the states. And so why are reimbursement rates at the whim of a bureaucrat? I mean, why aren't those standardized?
Well, and again, this is not my area of expertise, but that's the argument of Family Care. Or they're saying, look, there's another organization right here in Portland, and they're getting a higher reimbursement rate than we are, and we're operating in the same space. Why is that? And so their Family Care is feeling like they're being undercut, and they can't make ends meet, and they're challenging the state. And clearly, the state chose to fight back. So what should be pointed out to your listeners is that, at least in the article that I was reading when I was kind of, this was fascinating to me myself, there was at least 5 staff members quoted in that article that were paid to sit around and come up with a communication campaign to basically put doubt and negative stuff out there on this particular CCO. So first of all, for an organization to be targeted is shocking from a state agency. Secondly, taxpayer dollars were used to pay for that.
Yeah, and that's on the same par as the IRS going after conservative organizations, where you've got a bureaucracy like the Oregon Health Authority working to undermine that CCO. I mean, it's shocking to see our own government trying to sabotage a private organization like that, which is only in existence because the government set it up in the first place.
Correct. And I don't know who did the famous quote, but there's that quote that you should fear the government that fears its people.
Yeah.
So what you're seeing is government agencies going after, you know, the people for whatever point or view to get things to go their direction, to benefit the state agency, the federal regulations, whatever it may be. And the government is there to work for us. At the local and federal level, it is our government, and that's what's happening in our country. We've got to take it back. We've got to uncover these nasty little nests.
Yes. Well, you know, it seems to have worked with the Oregon Health Authority that they were able to undermine Family Care, because Family Care had floated the bill, SB 133, that absolutely went nowhere, but it would have required the Oregon Health Authority to make information regarding payments to coordinated care organizations publicly available. These are public funds. They shouldn't even have to suggest that these public funds ought to be publicly available.
Right. But remember, this whole thing, this whole revamp of the Medicaid system here in Oregon was a think tank, an experiment that Obama gave Kitzhaber, that with the promise that he was going to drive down the growth rate of our Medicaid cost and population. And so if you can't drive it down because you're actually not managing it well enough, or the costs are just more than you expected, another way to drive it down to make yourself look good to the feds is just to force it down, right?
Yeah.
To just not pay that company who's taking care of those people who are at risk, just not pay them appropriately.
That's right. And then you're protecting the government rather than the people that it's supposed to be serving. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me again.
That is all of our time for today on the iSpy Radio Show. Be sure to check out iSpyRadio.com for a bunch of links related to today's show, including the Northwest Center. And be sure to pass those links along, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.